I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You don't think that it's time that somebody cared enough to have a dream?
Why are you getting so upset? This is not about you.
Yes, it is. You are a human affront to all women, and I am a woman.
At some point, you gotta decide for yourself who you are. Can't let nobody make that decision for you.
How do you go about getting an exorcism?
I beg your pardon?
Hi, this is Mark Kermode. Thanks for downloading this Kermode on Film podcast. This episode is the first of two, recorded live at the recent MK3D show at the BFI South Bank in London. Next week, we're going to hear from Vinette Robinson and Jason Fleming talking about their amazing new single-shot feature, Boiling Point. And we'll hear from Lucy Darwin and Miriam Margolyes about their road movie, Driving Miss Margolyes. But this week, my guests are writer and critic Ellen E. Jones, who's also my co-host on the forthcoming new Radio 4 programme Screenshot, and one of my favourite actors of all time, the incredible Kate Dickie. So sit back, relax, and enjoy a front row seat at MK3D, recorded live at the BFI South Bank.
Good evening, everybody. Look, it's an absolutely packed house. How fabulous to see you all here. It seems like only a couple of weeks ago that we were on stage doing the last show, and that's because it was only a couple of weeks ago that we were on stage doing that. It kind of works out as to wherever it falls in the month, whether it's early in the month or later in the month. Now, we have a hugely packed show tonight, as opposed to last time when we had a hugely packed show. So I'm going to move straight on because there's an awful lot to get through and I'm very, very excited about all of it. I'm going to start by showing you a trailer for a film which is out this Friday. It played at the London Film Festival and then I'm going to bring our first guest on. So here we go.
You left your father here alone. You left him here because of her. You're only here now because she's dead.
You've no place talking about my wife.
And you've no place here. You can go.
I don't even know to this place. It's a far way out west.
Breathe in space, Mr. Black. Just that, right? The old cottage. That's your home now.
It's just me and you, Baxter. It's just me and you.
Something's haunting you, Mr. Black. I can see it.
You'd always pull back to what you know. You can't help but follow your blood.
So here's the thing. It's a great trailer. It's a really, really creepy film. And you all probably know I'm a big horror film fan. But I saw that trailer, and the thing that jumped out for me is Kate Dickie's in it, right? Because I loved Kate Dickie in Red Road. I loved her in Under Gods. I loved her for Those in Peril. I loved her in this. And I have been asking Kate Dickie to come on this show, and I'm not kidding because I look back through my messages, for 5 years. So I don't know whether she's got something against me, but she's finally here. Ladies and gentlemen, Kate Dickie.
Hello.
I am reminded of the time that I found myself in a room with Liza Minnelli, and I was interviewing her and I asked her a question and I couldn't believe that she was there, and as she was answering the question, I reached down, poked her to, to make sure it was actually really her. Kate, I'm so thrilled to have you on the show.
Oh,
how the hell are you?
I'm good, and I'm so pleased to be finally here. It's true, Mark's been inviting me for a while, and I've not been able to make it, so it's a delight to be here tonight. Thank
Let's
you.
Start by just saying a few words about Shepherd. Very, very creepy horror film. I have to say, there's a moment in it very early on when the main protagonist gets on a boat to a remote island, and you're the driving the boat. And I'm thinking, if I was him, I would get off the boat now. So tell us about the film and how you got involved in it.
So Russell Owen, the director, had approached me with a script, so Shepherd's like a kind of study of grief and mental health and things like that, guilt and a lot of psychological stuff. And Fisher, my character, actually, it was a hard character to play because Russell and I spent quite a while trying to find where we would pitch her. I tried a really cheery and friendly, and then I tried a really angry, and actually what we ended up finding was this kind of almost neutral, kind of odd, lacking in any emotion sort of character. And she's a kind of like a reflection of Tom's mind in the film. So it was a tricky part to play, actually.
So you take him over there, and then there's a couple of times when you hear him on the phone, and in one of the early phone conversations, you say something to the effect of, oh, well, you know, you've lost the plot already, because the whole thing is being on the island, being, you know, with the lighthouse that doesn't work.
Yeah.
So you become essentially the voice in his head, the voice of the thing that is driving him to madness.
Yeah, I really am. And that's why it was quite hard to find the right tone to suit his mind. But yeah, I'm like almost, it's ambiguous whether Fisher is real, not real, whether she's a figment of his mind, whether she's a kind of manifestation of his guilt and mental health. So yeah, she was really interesting to play.
It's a very cold film in terms of the climate of the film. And when I was watching it, I did that thing. Sometimes if you watch a film and it's working, you start to feel the climate of the movie. And I found myself putting a coat on indoors, thinking, oh no, I'm warm in my house. It's only, was it as bleak as it looked?
Yeah, I mean, Mull, it was bleak. Mull's beautiful. If you get a chance to go to Mull, it's beautiful, beautiful island, but it was bleak. And the landscape becomes another character, really, in the movie, as you say. And it's remote and bleak, and it was windy, and the crew and everyone worked so hard to make that movie and wrangle this film in the middle of nowhere, basically.
Are you doing all your own boat work?
Yes, it's on my CV. I kind of hung on a thing, and there was a driver there, and I kind of did a bit of that.
Do you like horror films?
No, I don't watch them. This is the thing, right? I can't even hear a bar of scary music, and I'm up off my seat and I'm out the door.
And this has got a very, very disturbing score.
It's got a really disturbing score, and I watched that on my own in the GFT at a screening, literally like that. Because I can be in horrors, but I can't watch them. I watched Censor, actually, recently.
Did you love it?
I loved it. And I thought, okay, I'm going to try and get a bit braver with the horror.
Because you're in The Witch, or as they write it on the poster, The Vavitch. For some reason, I don't. Which is one of the creepiest movies I've seen. I went with my son to see it, who I have brought up to love horror films. And he was completely wigged out by it, in a very good way, but he was like really, really wigged out. Tell me about working on that film.
Oh, that was incredible. I mean, I always end up in the middle of nowhere, but we were in the middle of nowhere in Canada, and we had a week's rehearsal, and Rob said, I just want us to build a family as tight as we can be so we can literally decimate them. So we spent a week getting our family really tight, and the kids running to us and cuddles, and then we brought out the horror and the kids were running away from us. But yeah, Rob's and so Ellie was really small for her age, the twins. So yeah. Ellie was actually nearly 11, but tiny. But Lucas was actually 6, and he was just like kicking Robert in the groin, being like, when do we start the play, you know? So we had this kind of wee rag-taggle family out there, and oh, it was brilliant working with Rob.
That's another example of a film, which it's a horror film, but like this, it's a psychological horror. For a long part of it, you think that everything could be in their mind, even the idea of the scary goat,
yeah.
But it's all... It's all psychological. It's not like a, you know, like an obvious supernatural story.
Yeah, that's right. And I like what I like about them as well. And I'm, well, as I say, I don't watch horror, but I really don't like.
You've been in a few.
I can be in them, but I don't like the slash and the jumps and all that. And what I like about Shepherd or The Witch or that is the old-fashioned craft of building suspense and stretching out your tension and things like that, rather than just relying on blood and guts and stuff.
What's it like doing that on set? Because obviously, when you're on set of a movie, whether it's a location or whatever, do you feel any sense of the fear that you're generating? Because obviously, you know, you're acting, but then there's somebody there with a clapperboard and somebody there with a camera. It must be very hard to get into the mindset of the atmosphere of an eerie, chilling film while you're actually making it.
Yeah, it can be. I mean, I think luckily when you're working in locations like, you know, we did in Shepherd or in The Witch, where you're actually, I mean, in The Witch we had to do, like, bear things. I'm doing this, I don't know if so I'll explain that, sorry. Strange hand movement. We had to do these bear things where we would, if we saw a bear, we were to run and let off this, like, rocket, and then we were all to run to a point. We didn't see a bear in the end, but... I was hoping to.
Were there a lot of bears around?
There were bears in the woods and wolves and stuff, so we had to have this whole thing, whereas if we were attacked by a wolf or a bear, we ran to this special thing and let off this rocket.
Is that a usual safety procedure on a film in case of being attacked by a bear or a wolf?
No, and I get really excited because I really wanted to see wolves and I never, but yeah.
On the upside, you're still alive, so you know. So, but when you're making it, do you ever feel scared? Because you say you don't like to watch it, but when you're making it, do you ever feel creeped out?
Well, I tend to like to get into character quite deeply, so...
Are you method? Do you have a Meisner or whatever it is? Or?
Not method to the point I'll go home at night and be in character with my family, but I do like to sort of immerse myself. I use a lot of music and I make playlists and I use... paintings, street photography, lots of visuals and stuff to sort of get into character. So I do like to go deep, but I'm not kind of going home at night and kind of, you know, dressing as a Puritan and stuff like that.
Because I'll say this, I think this is one of the... And you know how much of a fan I am. I've seen you in... I think I've seen every film you've ever made. Some of them have been brilliant, some of them not so great. You have never been anything less than 100%. And I think the best thing about your work on screen, I have never seen you not be good, even if the film you're in is just okay. It looks like you commit to every single role.
Well, I think that's very kind. Thank you. I think the important thing is if you take on a role, it should be because you want to do the role and not because, like, oh, I've got a job, you know.
Yeah.
So for me, it's really important to take roles on that I genuinely want, I believe in, that
okay.
I want to tell their story, that I'll give everything to them, you know. I think it's really, I think that's your job as an actor, is to tell the best story you can in the best way you can and be as committed as possible.
Can I take you right back to Red Road, which, because I was in Cannes when Red Road played, and obviously it's a, you know, huge part of your career. Tell us about what the experience, we have a clip from Red Road, which I'll show in a moment, but how did Red Road come about and why was it such an important film for you?
Oh, Red Road, I mean, it was like a lucky accident or something. I think Andrew had been looking for Jackie for about a year.
It's Andrea Arnold.
Yeah, Andrea Arnold, the director, and she, oh God, I can't say enough amazing, amazing things about her. She's incredible. And taught me so much for my first film. I had no idea. I'd done a bit of telly and I'd done a short film. I didn't have a clue. And most of that shoot was her going, less, 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 less. You know, because I'd come from the theatre and I was doing theatre acting, and she taught me about how a look or a whisper on screen is as big as, you know, sort of projecting. And... oh, Jackie was just a gift of a part. I didn't even know at the time that it was quite unusual for women to play leads, you know, like a lead like that. And it was just the most amazing script. And to be in every scene and work with Andrea and work with Tony Curran, it was a joy. I just kind of jumped into it. I had no idea. And, you know, I knew it was going to be quite full on in bits. And Tony and I had went to drama school together, so we just made a pact at the beginning, right, we're going to go for this, really go for it, and we trust each other. And
because of what you said about less, and how a look can be more important than anything you say, which is really useful, because the clip I'm about to show is you in the control room, because just for, I assume a lot of people will have seen it, but if they haven't, your job is that you're running surveillance cameras mm-hmm. around the Red Road Estate. Mm-hmm. And we're just going to see a clip, and there is almost no dialogue except for you on the phone, but it is all to do with you looking, with you watching screens, with you.
Yeah.
And it's a perfect example of how you say everything, not through what you say, but yeah. what how the look is. So let's have a look.
Is this 24-hour locksmiths? Do you have someone called Clyde Henderson working for you? Did you do a police check on him? Doesn't matter who I am. Hello, this is City Eye Control Room. Ambulance needed on the Burmullock Estate, Kirtland Drive. It's urgent, please hurry. It looks like a stabbing, a young girl. The girls responsible are cutting through the flats at the back of Kirtland Drive. There's several girls, white, aged about 14, look like they're from the Peters Hill School. Okay, I'm here.
The atmosphere of that scene is so intense, and I remember seeing it in Cannes when everything's cranked up anyway, and it's a really, really powerfully atmospheric film, and it's all to do with suggestion. So was it, filming it, was it a fulfilling experience?
Oh, it was so fulfilling, and yeah, it was like 3 weeks, we shot it in 21 days, I think, and
wow.
It was just in every day, 6 days a week. And, oh, that scene, because she's so busy, she gets obsessed with this guy from her past and she starts following him on the CCTV monitors. But while she's watching him, girl gets stabbed and I'm supposed to be watching it for that. So, yeah, it's a really interesting story, actually. And a sad character of, you know, again, someone really lost in grief. And
how was it being in Cannes with that film?
So... Cannes, right? That was the first time I saw the film, was it?
Oh, wow.
Was with 2,500 people in the La Lumiere, and I ended up watching the film like that. Oh, God, it was terrifying. And before I went, I was so green, and my family said, oh, we're going to Cannes. And Andrea said, we're in competition. I was like, is that good? She said, yeah, kind of. So then my boyfriend said, I'm like, should we come? And I was like, no, it's just a film festival, says me. And I got there and it was like...
And it became the hot ticket.
It absolutely became
the hot ticket film.
The most terrifying experience of my life. And then we got to premiere and I just took fright. So I said, Andrea and her partner came to get me and I went, I'm not going. I'm just going to wait in my room and I'm not going to come. And she was like, no, you have to come. No, I can't. And it ended up with my fingers around the door jamb. And I wouldn't leave, and they had to prize every finger off. Because I was like, I just took total fright, and I thought, this is like a bit bigger than just a film festival.
Wow. Well, in a way, that is the best way to do Cannes, is going in not really understanding, because the madness of it.
It's mad.
I mean, even as a journalist, I can't go because I can't take the level of intensity of it. So heaven knows what it's like actually having a film.
And I've never done a interview before, and it was like 3 days from 10 in the morning to 6 at night. Here's China, here's Russia, here's Japan, here's... And I had no training, and I had no idea what I was doing. And they were all saying, oh, what's it like to have real sex for a film? And I was like, no, it's acting. Because was the same year, Nine Songs, a film
Michael
called
Winterbottom film, yeah.
I haven't seen it, but they seemingly had real sex. So, and it was a compliment to Red Road, they thought it was real sex, but that is all I get asked for, and I was in absolute panic, thinking, oh my God, people think I'm in a porn, people think I'm in a porn. So, oh my God, it was wild. And then they came to do the hair and makeup, never had hair and makeup done in my life. I did my hair for them coming, right? So they turned up and I'm all ready, and they were like, we're here to do your hair and makeup. I was like, oh, I've done it. I said, you can just go. Oh, honestly, oh my God, I was so green. But it was a great experience, and it was, it was like nothing I'd ever been to in my life.
Well, listen, I'm going to leap forward, and since you said green, I'm going to leap forward to Green Knight, which I loved Green Knight. I was so bowled over by it. Oh. I'm going to show a clip. This is obviously adapted from Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, and which I had read when I was at college.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, but I have to say, you know, the poem, I'm sure it's brilliant, but I read it at college, so I don't really get it. And then I saw the film, and I absolutely loved it. And then I read Simon Armitage's translation as well. But this is a clip from the beginning of The Green Knight, in which your character becomes possessed effectively by the plot of the film. And again, I think this is a brilliant scene, and I love the film, but this is one of my favourite scenes in it.
Oh, greatest of kings, indulge me in this friendly Christmas game. Let whichever of your knights is boldest of blood and wildest of hearts step forth, take up arms, and try with honour to land a blow against me. Whomsoever nicks me shall lay claim to this my arm. Its glory and riches shall be thine. But thy champ must bind himself to this. Should he land a blow, then 1 year and Yuletide hence, he must seek me out yonder, to the Green Chapel, 6 nights to the north. He shall find me there and bend a knee and let me strike him in return. Be it a scratch on the check or a cut in the throat, I will return what was given to me, and then in trust and friendship we shall part. Who then? Who is willing to engage with me?
It's such a fabulous film. Was it fun?
Oh, it was great fun, and David Lowery is a joy to work with. And Sean and I had worked together in things before. He was great to work with. And Ralph again. And then the costumes were, like, incredible. Mine had all these, like, all those things were hand-sewn on. Yeah. It was a beautiful job to do. And it was interesting playing them later in life and kind of elderly and... You know, there's a bit in the film that's quite ambiguous, but there's an empty chair beside Sean, and that was actually Lancelot's, where he's been away now because we had the affair and stuff. So there's lots of little subtle things there that, you know, if you keep watching, you catch. But I actually, because I don't watch a lot of my own stuff because it just freaks me out.
It's very good, you should watch it.
But my friend, well, I did actually. My friend made me watch it last weekend, and I thought it was great. I just loved it. Like, because I just don't. I just find it really hard. But because I'm in it so little, I find it okay to watch. And I was like, oh, I haven't. Well, I've ruined it a wee bit, but not too much. And I thought it was beautiful.
Yeah.
And just all the imagery and the cinematography is incredible. Those aerial shots and. Yeah, beautiful.
I thought it was absolutely stunning, yeah. and you are brilliant in it. And it is such a visionary film. It's one of my favourites of the year, and I absolutely loved it. I just want to ask you about one other thing, For Those in Peril, which I thought was a terrific film, and I know that you liked it. And we're both big fans of Gorgeous George Mackay, who is such a sweetheart.
He's just gorgeous. George was 20 when we made that film, and he was just beautiful. He was beautiful in it. He's amazing in that film, isn't he?
Yeah, he really is.
And it's a study. It's basically a film about So I play the mother, and George is my son, and basically he's the only survivor of this fishing boat accident. So he goes out in this fishing boat with my other son and six other men, and he's the only one that comes back. And then the village kind of turn against us, and they see him as this bad omen, and he basically starts really struggling with his mental health, and it's just this beautiful performance about mental health and grief, and a kind of common theme of my films, basically. he's amazing. I loved working with him.
I'm going to ask you a closing thing. I'm going to ask you this honestly, but no names, no pack drill. You choose your projects really well, and is there anything that you've made, and I'm not asking you to name it if there is there anything that you've made that you think, I wish I hadn't done that?
Let me think. I think there's a couple of things that I've thought, they've maybe not worked out as well in the final cut as maybe the script had been. Okay. But I try and be careful. And it's not about it being like, I think it's going to be a really big film or really successful. I just try and... I've just got this thing about telling stories in the periphery or wanting to tell stories that maybe that aren't the popular ones, or... I just think everyone's got a right to sit at home and go, there's my life, you know? Even people that aren't having good lives or popular lives or pretty lives. So I try and choose quite carefully that way, but there is a couple along the way that I'm like, okay.
Well, I think your choices of movies have been brilliant. As I said, I am so glad to have you here, because you are genuinely one of my favourite actors, and I have been asking you for 5 years. So thank you so much. Please continue to make great choices. The great Kate Dishon.
Thank you.
Maybach, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Now, as you may or may not have noticed, there's this new radio program coming to Radio 4 very, very soon. That's me looking really old. And this is Ellen E. Jones, with whom I'm co-presenting this. This is called Screenshot. This starts on BBC 4 on December the...
Radio 4.
What did I say? BBC Radio 4, technically. Yeah, I'm an old man. I don't know anything. Nick's involved in it. And December the 3rd. That's the bunny. So we asked Ellen if she would come on and choose a couple of guilty pleasures, and ladies and gentlemen, they are very guilty. Ellen E. Jones.
Hello.
Should we start with a plug? Ellen, what can people expect from our fabulous new Radio 4 show?
Just the best possible guide with the best possible guides to That's the expanding good. Universe of all things screen storytelling.
Was that the off the cuff?
Yeah, man.
That was really good. Okay, I asked you to choose a couple of guilty pleasures, and I was actually surprised by both choices. I'm going to let you lead into the first of them, and then I'm going to ask you to explain yourself.
Well, this whole guilty pleasure thing kind of irritates me a little bit.
I know.
Because
we're going to get on
like
really
all
well
right-thinking people, I don't feel guilty about my pleasures. I'm quite. I live my life shamelessly. You know, I think you should either not do the things you're ashamed of and not be ashamed of the things you do, and I choose the latter often.
I'd just like to say that I feel guilty about absolutely everything. The only two emotions I really understand are guilt and regret.
So, that being said, I kind of, my first thought was something like Calamity Jane, but I just love that film, I don't feel guilty about it. Something kind of cheesy and cute. And then I thought, what really actually does make me feel guilty? And this is the films of S. Craig Zahler. Okay. These films, I feel bad even talking about them. I feel bad subjecting you lovely people to them.
The room is on your side.
I just find them hugely entertaining.
Okay.
And I'm basically coming to you as a kind of high priest of sort of grindhouse grots for absolution, seeking absolution. Please tell me this is okay.
Yeah, it's perfectly okay because they are both very, very gnarly choices. Let's begin with a clip from Brawl in Cell Block, which is the great Vince Vaughn. Doing. Here's the thing about this clip.
It's been a long time since Swingers, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. but he's wearing it so well. The thing about this clip is this: 90% of what's going on in this clip is the sound effects. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of the Three Stooges, but it's the sound effects. You don't actually see what you think you're seeing, but you hear it. Okay, here we go.
Maurizio needs help! What did you do?
Thomas, show us 10 fingers and we'll shoot.
You just lost your minimum freedom. Torn to 99.
I agree with you. I think it's a really great film. We had so much mail to the show when it came out saying, you won't believe how good.
Yeah.
How good it is. So what do you like about it?
Oh, God. I mean, I need to apologise some more before I can even...
Okay, fine.
I forgot to warn everyone about the racism and the sexism. It's just, like, all of his films... I mean, you don't see the sexism so much in it because there aren't any women hardly in the film at all. But, it's often, as a critic, you kind of get to separate yourself from that because you get to think, oh, it's just a character, you know. But in his films as well, they do seem to endorse the kind of racism and sexism. It's so icky, and it's just like, it's totally anathema to my politics. I'm really sorry. But it's so entertaining. There's such great hard-boiled, just crime thriller narratives. And I love the way that scene is shot in particular. I love the way he shoots those fight scenes. There's no, like, fast cuts. Like, it's typically the way you shoot a fast scene. You get to sort of, you know, part of that is just so that you're totally subjected to all the bone crunching and you don't get to look away. But also that I love the sort of lumbering, middle-aged physicality of it as well. Like,
I think there is, when you say it's, you know, that whole thing about how hard-boiled it is one of those films, I do think the sound effects is doing so much of the lifting work, but it is one of those films in which you remember that screen violence can be hugely entertaining. And you heard everyone kind of wincing but laughing at the same time. Yeah. There was a kind of pleasure in the room, particularly at you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, and that's why I kind of sidestepped your question about what is it I like about it, because I don't want to admit that that's maybe what I like about it.
Okay. Well, in that case, should we show a clip from your second choice, which I think is equally problematic in a very different way.
Yeah.
Tell us about Dragged Across Concrete.
Oh, God. So, well, it's got Mel Gibson in it for a start.
How's he doing recently?
Oh, God. I kind of love the fact that S. Craig Zahler is really kind of trolling sort of feminazi film critics like me who are like, you know, got a bit of a stick up our bum about people like this. But He's so it's the this is a film where you're asked to really sympathise with two racist, brutal cops who beat people up and sexually harass women and are just horrible pieces of work, basically.
Okay.
I love it.
The clip we're going to watch is particularly entertaining, not least because for me it reminds me of pretty much every experience I had in a packed cinema, because just as Gibson finds himself sitting next to Vince Vaughn in this clip, I would always find myself sitting next to this person in a cinema.
I am that person in a cinema.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Amen. I've been listening to and smelling that for the last 98 minutes. Best part of a stakeout, other than when it ends, is when you're eating. A single red ant could have eaten it faster.
I've actually got a Pret hummus wrap in my bag. I should have brought it on stage, shouldn't I? And we could have.
What I love about that is you see so many films in which people are supposed to be eating. And obviously, if you shoot a scene like five or six times or whatever it is, you know, they just pretend, they cut things up, they move things around, they hold the food. He is eating like I've never seen anyone...
And enjoying.
And you know that that's probably take 10,
yeah.
And he's just going the full measure.
So, Oscar, see?
Yeah, absolutely. So when you say you don't feel any form of guilt about those at all, but when you've talked about them, you said, but all these things are wrong with them and all these things are sort of problematic.
Yeah.
So is it something that you enjoy?
Oh, yeah. No, I do feel guilty about these.
Okay.
I don't feel guilty about anything else.
Okay, but you do feel guilty about these.
This is a genuine guilty pleasure, yeah.
And does that, as a critic, and you're a brilliant critic, are you conflicted in that at all, or do you...
Hugely conflicted, and maybe that is part of what's so compelling about it. Like, I, as I say, the whole sort of politics of it is, like, he's been called, like, MAGA America's favourite filmmaker and that sort of thing, and, you know, it's just, like, the opposite of who I am, but they're just... So, just really well-made crime thrillers. That's part of it. And I also think, like, for me, he's giving me the story of these kind of old blokes who think the world's conspiring against them and, like, you know, PC's gone mad and all that kind of stuff. And I'm kind of interested in that insight. I mean, you could argue that all of cinema is doing that, but particularly, like, he's kind of giving us an insight.
Just say, the thing I love particularly about this picture, OK, you just want to go... Just shave your head, man. Stop pretending with the ponytail. You're bald. Just shave it.
You know what? That's another thing I do kind of admire about him. That clip reminds me a bit of Tarantino, with the obvious difference that Tarantino, the dialogue's all kind of smart and pop culture referencing, and they're trying to be cool, and he's just not trying to be cool either. And that kind of makes it more cool, right?
Yeah, yeah. So when we asked you, did those two immediately leap to mind? Is that, or are there any other sort of skeletons in your closet?
No, as I say, I live my life shamelessly, with that exception.
Well, I think they're really, really good choices, because I think they are genuinely guilty. I think people, if you haven't watched them, if you do watch them, you will find yourself going, oh, my word, that is a little bit beyond the pale.
Yeah.
So thank you for properly, and I mean this as a compliment, for properly lowering the tone of the evening.
My pleasure.
So our Radio 4 show screenshot starts on December the 3rd on BBC Radio 4. Are we looking forward to it?
We're really looking forward to it.
Are we going to have rounds?
Are you looking forward to it?
I'm really excited about it. I'm genuinely really excited about it, but partly because when we were doing the pilot. I've got old man's brain. You are literally doing this show with somebody. You have to remind me who I am. Because we kind of recorded a bunch of discussions about things, and it was very, you know, it was very sparky.
The first conversation we had was a big row about Promising Young Woman.
It was a big row about Promising Young Woman, which I liked and you didn't.
Not so much.
No.
We'll talk about that another time.
Yeah, okay. So anyway, it starts on Radio 4, the fabulous Ellen E. Jones.
Well, there we are. That's the first half of the most recent MK3D show, recorded live at the BFI South Bank in London. My thanks to Kate Dickey and Ellen E. Jones. And you can hear the new show that I'm doing with Ellen, Screenshot, on BBC Radio 4 from December the 3rd. On next week's show, Vinette Robinson and Jason Fleming tell us about their new film, Boiling Point, and we hear from Miriam Margolyes and Lucy Darwin about their road movie, Driving Miss Margolyes. Thanks for listening to this Kermit on Film podcast. If you enjoyed it, remember to subscribe, tell your friends, and why not visit our Patreon page where there's loads of video extras. Join us next week for the second half of this MK3D live show, and if you like the sound of the live show and you want to come along in person, you can get tickets by going to the BFI website. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. Keep watching the skies.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.